but that would be the extent of our exposure under that fund.
Yes.
There's a proposal in 4.6 about establishing an executive-level steering committee to monitor implementation. Is that something that was negotiated? Is that something discussed across the table? Is that something that Commissioner Leonard, that you have added as a requirement in terms of compliance,
yes.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
So, and how would that committee be established?
We, if I recall, under the ARENA agreement, the City Council authorized representatives. The other side presents their representatives, but representation would be approved by City Council.
Yeah, that's what happened in the Rose Garden. The problem is, as we move through the next few months, we're going to need guidance and direction as we develop these detailed documents. And it would be hard every time we needed guidance and direction to show up in front of the City Council and to discuss that and reveal our position to the other side that we're negotiating with. So what occurred in the Rose Garden was the City Council designated one or two council members to kind of serve as a sounding board to help us as we work through these issues. And that's what's contemplated here, representatives from the council, PDC, so that we can get direction and guidance.
The mayor and I are strong supporters of the 2% for the arts program. There's a provision in the agreement that says the 2% for arts may be used to pay for this memorial. What does that mean?
The other side wanted to make it clear that the memorial to the veterans that they would design and build would be a suitable use of the 2% for art coming from this facility, and that would be because it will have artistic elements of design and it'll be a public sort of art display in effect.
So the 2% is not going to be taken out for art at the site. It is going to be put into the pro forma?
No, it'll be the 2% that is in the pro forma to pay for art can be used in part or in whole to pay part of the cost of the memorial that is going to be designed as a memorial to the veterans.
And who ultimately makes the decision on the question of how the 2% is spent?
Well, you make the ultimate decision on the design of the veterans memorial.
Are there any restrictions on our ability to demolish Memorial Coliseum currently?
No.
We have no agreement with any party that limits our ability to demolish the Coliseum?
We have agreements with the Trailblazers, but those agreements don't limit our ability to demolish Memorial Coliseum.
Could I follow up on what Commissioner Fritz raised about the SDCs? Because we have Parks, Water, BES, PDOT SDCs that we regularly deal with. Does the city have any responsibility for SDCs in this project at the Memorial Coliseum?
Well, the intent of this is that the city would find a way that the city would be responsible for any net SDCs that are due.
And what does that mean? What would be an example of a net SDC due on this project?
Well, let me just first say that the Bureau has to do a lot of thinking about this whole SDC issue because the SDC ordinances that now exist don't deal with SDCs for a publicly owned arena. There isn't a methodology to calculate it or anything. So this is a work in process. What is represented here is a negotiated point, which is that if you knock down a facility and thereby diminish its transportation impact, those are credits that could be applied to a new facility that you build. And all that has yet to be worked out, Commissioner. This is just a concept.
In the proposed construction of going to the question of the bidding rules, design build, and Mr. Polston having the opportunity to select his own contractor, do public rules concerning prevailing wage construction jobs apply to that project?
I think they will apply to that project. Again, that is another detail that we have yet to get into at this stage. But that is the intent, yes.
Yes.
And has anybody quantified specifically what the economic benefit of this project is within reasonable parameters to the city of Portland?
Commissioner, I think the best source for that is Mr. Paulson had an economic analysis commissioned by a firm, ERA, and they produced a report on that. Mr. Paulson or we could get you the details on that.
Do you recall the finding?
Not off the top of my head, I don't.
I guess the last question I want to ask, and knowing that this, we're being asked to sort of get engaged, not married, probably changes a little bit the way we look at some of the details. I mean, none of us here, we're here and you're there for a reason. Although I'm still not sure why Ken Russ doesn't have any gray hair, given what he covers, but...
made him blush.
I'm sure he'll sprout some today.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask you, Steve, to go back to the PGE Park analogy that you raised at the beginning of your remarks that are set forth in the Q&A we've been given. Because the shadow of PGE Park is sort of haunts this room a little bit as we look at revising the deal with existing debt still there and lessons learned. Could you just succinctly, for my benefit again, explain what we did learn from PGE Park?
In PGE Park, the concern was the city is going to put money in, and this group of local investors is going to make a lot of money. So the initial approach was to say we need them to guarantee a certain amount of revenue that would cover our bonds, and they were unwilling to personally guarantee anything. So the only party, quote, guaranteeing it was the entity itself that owned the teams. And in addition to that, we wanted to make sure that if they succeeded, that the city would share in the upside. So we focused on if revenues are beyond a certain projected level, we get a share of the upside on the revenues. If their profits were above a certain level, we got a share of the profits. And so we were far more dependent upon the business success of that enterprise. And the reason for being more confident on the success of that business enterprise was you had someone very, very experienced who was leading that coming out of the Trailblazer organization, and you had a number of local business people. What we found was that the projections they had made of attendance and the projections our own consultants gave us as to attendance were off. And so we didn't realize the money we expected from that. So what we are now focusing on is don't try to participate or control the operating business. Rather, look to get a very deep-pocketed personal guarantee on the amount you need to service the bonds you're selling. And so that's the fundamental difference.
So if I could expand on that, because this is a point that I initiated the discussion amongst our team around a very significant philosophical difference from prior deals. I am quite aware, as I'm sure you will see here demonstrated today, that there are people lying in the weeds waiting for projects like this to fail. They give no credit where we succeed. If that deal that Steve just described was fabulously wealthy, but somebody tripped and broke their ankle leaving PGE Park, all you would hear about is the person that tripped and broke their ankle leaving PGE Park. So for me, the significant lesson had to be that we need to concern ourselves, even at the expense of making future profits, with covering our obligations. And we had a very frank discussion with Merritt on that exact point when we said to him, we want you to understand the philosophical difference in this deal from the PGE Park deal. And that being specifically, we are consciously making a decision. Don't think we're overlooking this aspect. We are consciously making a decision to forego any future revenues that you might realize with the success of your two businesses. For the quid pro quo of you assuring us a revenue stream, guaranteeing us a revenue stream so that we know our obligations will always be met without having to go to the general funds. But let me make one other point that kind of gets to the other point of those that are just looking for reasons to criticize these deals. The fact of the matter is the general fund never subsidized PGE Park, ever. There were those that would have you believe that. The fact of the matter is that the revenue streams that had been created to go into the spectator fund always covered the cost, even at the most dire financial times for PGE Park. They never encumbered the general fund. But having said that, again, what we've sought to do and we've succeeded in doing is really something I consider to be extraordinary in terms of deals that we have constructed here in the past for sports teams, and that is to absolutely guarantee not just the bond payments but the revenue streams. The revenue streams that will assure us that we will never put at harm the general fund.
So, just to summarize, the lessons learned at PG Park have been absolutely infused into this proposed deal.
Well, and I would add that to what Commissioner Leonard said is that we the financial architects of the PG Park deal never relied on the projections to be able to be successful in order for us to pay debt service on the bonds. We were hopeful, but we planned for failure as well. We had the VDI revenues that contributed present value about $20 million to that project. We had the Spectator Facilities Fund behind that. We were extremely comfortable that under the worst case scenario, it would never be a problem for the general fund. And that's exactly the kind of thinking structured differently in this transaction that we're trying to duplicate again.
And I have
Commissioner Fish has more questions.
I have high regard for my colleague and his assessment on that. I guess one thing I would throw into the mix is that on the PGE Park deal, there was a lost opportunity. There was an opportunity cost.
And there's one today too.
I understand.
Be clear that there's a potential lost opportunity today.
But and to Commissioner Fritz's question about if we accelerated paying off bonds and money coming into the general fund, that's not. I don't quantify that as the same kind of opportunity cost because the current bonds take us out quite a ways. But the flexibility in what we use the revenue for, which can be used for many public purposes, is an opportunity cost. And I would quantify
that. It is.
That.
But if you were advising somebody today whether or not they should get into the stock market and said, well, based on the performance of the last 3 months, I would advise that you put your money in a bank account forever. That would be advice based on short-term experience that probably wasn't serving that person well in the long term because, as we know, the stock market on the long term performs much better. For us to get focused on aspects of the PGE deal without giving credit where credit is due, the things that went right, in other words, then also the things that went wrong that we learned from and are reflected in this deal, I think would be a huge lost opportunity.
So Commissioner Fish has one more question than Commissioner Saltzman.
And actually, in framing the question, my intent was to give this esteemed lawyer a softball to explain clearly why this is not PGE Park Redux, not to argue the point about the lessons learned.
I appreciate that.
Once upon a time was actually intimately familiar with some of the lessons learned. So here's the other question.
Yes, you were. And then you used them against the candidates in a political arena. Very successfully.
Here's the other question I want to ask you, because if this council today or tomorrow, whenever we vote on this, decided in its judgment that there was one or more financing pieces that we didn't like, which would be our prerogative. It could include an urban renewal funded piece or something else. If we had anywhere from just heartburn to a decision of the council that should be removed, is that any different than agreeing to this but saying between now and September 1st, we have a right to reevaluate all the terms based on new information and we can yank the deal? In other words, are we limited as a council reviewing this in our ability to modify any of the financial terms for this thing to have the effect that it needs, apparently, for Mr. Paulson to get an award of a franchise?
Do you mind if I focus that question just a bit? Can we remove the $15 million Westside URA amount and substitute it for something else if the council approves this today?
If you want to, yes.
Your question?
On the personal guarantee, you know, we met yesterday and you told me that the only avenue out of a personal guarantee is bankruptcy?
Correct. Okay.
I had one last question. So part of the left on the table at OCC about $7 million in unused taxable amount. One of the projects being contemplated that is not currently on the list is the site, I call it the Burgerville site, that the Schlesinger family of companies is looking to develop. And in order for that to move forward, they want to take, or they would like to get $5 million or so to have this major redevelopment occur over there. Do you know the value of the value that would be put on, and that's a taxable, that would show up on the property taxes. Do you know the value of their proposed project and how much money the schools and the county and the city and the port would get as a result of that?
I do not have those numbers. I'd be happy to get back to you with the specifics. I believe the first phase was about a $100 million private investment.
So the point I want to make here is the opportunity, if that project moves forward, if the Portland Development Commission chooses to make an investment of $5 million in it, and there's a $100 million private or $100 million asset in, you know, on what are right now underused blocks that the school district, the county, the city, and the port would be getting more money that would outweigh potentially, I don't know, that's what we got to look at numbers, at least would help with any cost to them for the $15 million that would go into the PG Park from a new urban renewal district.
Could I ask a question about that?
Yep.
How would the bond, the $5 million for that project be bonded?
There would be two different options. One, you would have to access the same type of deferred interest bond structure that we've talked about for the Rose Quarter projects, or PDC would have to look at its current budget and decide to rearrange some priorities within that budget. So there's two options.
We could at least give them the same option that we're giving Merit, which is go out and find a buyer for the zero coupon bonds. So I just, this is a package, and we are very mindful of the potential impact on the county, the city, the school districts, and the port on $15 million going to a spectator fund. And I just want to get out there as a package. OCC operates very differently than a lot of other urban renewal districts, and there's a lot of upside to this deal as well as some potential downside to this deal to the property tax dependent jurisdiction. So if you could give me a rough estimate on that, Lou, that would be great. Any other questions from council for this panel? What time is it? Okay. Chair Wheeler has a 12:30, but I think it's important that we hear from Merritt first, and then we'll hear from Chair Wheeler and the other electeds in the room. So Merritt, if you and your team would come forward. Welcome to the City Council.
Thank you.
Please give us your names, and we'll let you make some opening comments, and I'm sure there'll be questions from the council.
Merritt Paulson, owner of the Portland Beavers and the Portland Timbers.
Greg Peden, Gallatin Public Affairs, registered lobbyist, representing Merritt and his interests.
Don Mazziotti, representing Shortstop LLC.
Mr. Mayor and commissioners, thank you. I'm pleased to join you on what is a historic day for the people of Portland and Oregon, a day that in time people will remember along with other important decisions we have made to invest in our future and enhance our quality of life. From the Beavers at Vaughn Street Park to the Buckaroos to Rip City and Soccer City USA to other important public investments in the arts, parks, and public transportation, this agreement paves the way to bring Major League Soccer to Portland and for even better Beavers baseball in Portland. And most important, this plan creates hundreds of jobs, protects taxpayers from risks, and brings even better family-friendly, fan-friendly, and community-friendly soccer and baseball to Portland and Oregon. Of the total funding plan, our ownership group has agreed to pay or guarantee a majority of the total cost. We are paying for the new soccer team, contributing to help improve and construct the stadiums, guaranteeing bonds, and safeguarding against cost overruns. This is an exceptionally fair deal for the city and taxpayers. If you are a worker, this creates jobs. If you are a taxpayer, this protects you from risk. If you are a fan, this means even better soccer and baseball. If you are a veteran, this honors your service. If you use city and school athletic fields, this improves them. If you play youth sports or host civic gatherings, this creates exciting new venues to use and enjoy. And if you love Portland, as I do, this revitalizes an area of the city ripe for renewal and showcases Portland to the nation and the world. I want to thank every member of the City Council for their thoughtful approach and open minds. I'd like to especially thank Commissioner Randy Leonard and Mayor Sam Adams for their leadership in tough but fair negotiations and support. I want to thank the members of the Citizen Task Force and city staff who reviewed this idea and made it better. I want to thank the people of Lentz, particularly the Little League and neighborhood leaders who early on embraced our vision, earning our gratitude and respect. I want to thank the thousands of soccer and baseball fans who have made their voices and opinions known to me and elected officials. And most important, I want to thank the citizens of Portland and Oregon for their love of the Timbers and Beavers and the support they have shown their teams for over many years. Some of the, you guys are here today, and I want to thank you all. Rest assured, we will continue to work hard every day to keep and earn your trust, both on and off the field. As we proceed with turning this dream into a reality, an even more exciting reality. I'm happy to take your questions. I'd like to address a couple questions that have come up already from Commissioner Fish, if I may. One was in regard to teams that were in contention, expansion markets for MLS teams that bowed out. Those were not the three markets you mentioned were, if I recall, Miami, Montreal, and Atlanta. MLS is judging expansion markets on three criteria: quality of the market for soccer, quality of the ownership group, and facility. Atlanta bowed out because they couldn't address the facility issue. They'd have to construct a new facility, and given the timelines, they weren't able to do so. They're still very interested. Miami was ruled out by MLS because of the quality of that market. MLS team existed in Miami before and was removed. South Florida is an exceptionally difficult market for professional sports. Professional sports at every level that currently exists there, the NBA team, the MLB team, and even the NFL team, all have had a bit of wind in their face. And so there's some real serious concerns about that market. So this was not the owners backing out in those two circumstances. Montreal's a different circumstance. They're quibbling with MLS over the price of the team. Again, they still are interested. So that's one question. You also raised a question about economic impact. And Don, please correct me if I'm wrong. I should be able to do this in my sleep right now. But the one-time construction impact of this deal will create over 600 jobs and have an economic impact of over $150 million to the city. The ongoing impact of this project over time on an annual basis will have a $30 million annual economic impact and will create over 150 jobs? That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Other questions from council?
Are we hearing from the other gentlemen?
No.
Only if you have a question.
They're there for protection.
They're bodyguards. So,
they're my Secret Service.
I'm frightened.
So I have a few questions, and I'm going to call you Merritt, even though we don't know each other that well, but we'll keep it informal, if that's okay.
As long as I can call you Nick.
No, you
maybe
can't.
Maybe calling me worse things before this is over.
I'll
take Nick while we can. So it may not be any of our business, but since this is a public-private partnership, I don't feel constrained in asking. What is the likelihood that in your deal with MLS, you'll pay less than $40 million for the franchise?
MLS has towed a very hard line about the $40 million price of the team. I can't commit to you that at the end of the day that will be the final purchase price. I can definitely commit to you will be right around there. But my understanding is it's a $40 million deal at this point in time.
So I'm asking you a question. It's not a rhetorical question. You're a business person. I'm not. all of the assumptions and the pro formas that we've been presented with assume a $40 million contribution by you into the deal. And then there's matching financing. If you are able to secure a deal with MLS where you where you pay less than $40 million, is that money that would otherwise, is that money at a savings available to help finance the deal?
You know, I would tell you this deal is in the balance. You know, I'm out over the skis, you know, in a pretty big way on this right now. I'd be willing to look at alternative plans down the road. That's not something that I would commit to. No.
So another just issue I want to raise: you and I share a passion, and that is we're both passionate about soccer. My passion is tilted a little bit towards youth soccer, partly because I want to make sure that young people in our community have the same opportunities that we're contemplating giving to a professional team. And youth soccer has become a huge sport here, along with lacrosse and some other and softball and other sports. But just singling out youth soccer, what is the benefit to the youth soccer movement in this city and region of bringing Major League Soccer to Portland?
It's a great question, and you and I share the same commitment to youth soccer. And having a pinnacle to aspire to, the highest level of soccer being played in North America in your own city at the MLS level, is a great umbrella from which to grow youth soccer overall. And our plans call for we're actually launching a player development league right now, and under 21. All the players on that team are under 21 and come from the area. We're going to be launching a soccer academy in future years, working with all the local youth soccer clubs, continue to use our players out in the field, in and around the community, coaching, making player appearances. And so I'd say that having something to aspire to is a tried and true mechanism for encouraging and promoting youth soccer. And, you know, the same can be said for other sports, the NBA.
Other questions? All right, please stick around. We might have questions later.
I don't think there's any worry about that.
I want to thank and bring up County Chair Ted Wheeler and Portland Public School Board member Trudy Sargent. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Sorry to keep you waiting.
Thank you, Mayor Adams and Commissioners. My name is Ted Wheeler. I'm Chairman of the Board of County Commissioners of Multnomah County. I'm here today to speak on behalf of all five members of the Multnomah County Commission. First of all, I think everybody in this room knows I have some very specific concerns about the deal as it's been proposed thus far and as I understand it thus far. And I want to be clear right up front. My concern has nothing to do with soccer, and it has nothing to do with baseball. And I also want to make it clear that there's nothing I can say here today that takes away in any way from the leadership that Mayor Adams and Commissioner Leonard have shown in trying to bring MLS to the city of Portland. I also want to say that this certainly in no way takes away from Merritt Paulson and his strong personal commitment both to the deal as well as his desire to make Portland a better and more livable city. I want you to also know that I value professional sports in the city of Portland. I previously served on the board of directors of the Oregon Sports Authority, and I know there's a number of people here today who support that organization. It works hard to bring professional sports teams and sporting events to the city of Portland and Oregon at large. I understand very clearly the value of professional sports teams around basketball, baseball, and soccer in terms of fostering economic development, job growth, tourism, and fostering a sense of civic pride, which should not be understated as an important value. So I'm not opposed to soccer, nor am I opposed to the goal on which Mayor Adams and Commissioner Leonard are working towards. My concern today centers on the specific manner in which this deal is proposed to be funded, as I understand it at this point. And specifically, my concern and that of my fellow commissioners is the use of tax increment financing to support a large portion of this deal. And based on the testimony and some of the answers given. There are still obvious questions that need to be answered with regard to that part of the deal. The inescapable fact of using tax increment funding is that it can create trade-offs between building a sports stadium and supporting other critical services. The Citizens Task Force was charged specifically and foremost with ensuring that the city's general fund budget would be protected. I was impressed with their presentation. I believe they lived up to that obligation. But they were never asked to provide the same assurances to either Multnomah County or to the school districts, which share in the cost of tax increment financing. I think that was a significant oversight, and it needs to be addressed before anybody agrees to any deal. I've been asked several times, a couple of times today already, what business of this is this of Multnomah County? And in short, when the deal started moving towards tax increment financing, it became Multnomah County's business. And I have an obligation of the chair of that jurisdiction to represent our interests in this discussion. You all know the details of tax increment financing. You understand how the property valuations are capped, and then excess revenues that are generated by urban development and economic growth go back into the district for specific projects. The TIF tool was intended to be used in truly blighted areas to foster economic development where there was not sufficient incentive for private sector enterprises to invest in the absence of those public tax dollars going into the district. In the worst case scenario, urban renewal and tax increment financing are used in areas that are not truly blighted. In that case, what happens is any incremental values and incremental tax dollars that are coming into that district, rather than going out to jurisdictions like Multnomah County so that we can provide our services or towards the school district, are instead redirected towards projects that might or might not be funded in the absence of public tax dollar contributions. Right now, it's estimated that a quarter of all tax increment financing comes from the Multnomah County tax base. In total, that amounts to about $20 million a year. I want to be clear, Multnomah County probably would have supported the vast majority of those urban renewal decisions and the investment of that tax increment financing in those urban renewal areas. But we have a specific concern right now, and that is that Multnomah County is facing an unprecedented fiscal crisis. We're looking at a $45 million budget shortfall. On top of that, there's potentially $20 million more in budget cuts that will be as a result of reductions at the state level. So this massive reduction will have an impact on our ability to provide core services to the community. Creating a new urban renewal area, particularly one where we don't understand what the boundaries are and we don't yet understand what the indebtedness level is going to be, could potentially add to our fiscal crisis over the long run. I've spent most of the last 8 weeks anguishing over what programs Multnomah County is going to cease to be involved in and what services we are going to eliminate that the community currently enjoys. On top of that, I have to make hard decisions about which and how many of my 4,500 employees are going to lose their jobs in the middle of a difficult recession. This morning's newspaper gives you an idea of the kind of tough choices I have to make. The headline article says, "Rehab Faces Budget Axe." And what it's referring to is a program that is renowned around the world. It's our drug court. And yes, it is on the cut list in this budget cycle. In addition, we're looking at cuts to public safety, potentially hundreds of jail beds, public health cuts, cuts to aging services, cuts to libraries, cuts to gang prevention, and the list goes on and on. In all of this talk about... Bless you, Mayor.
Excuse me.
In all of this talk about job creation and the MLS proposal, I don't want you to lose sight of another influencing factor. Multnomah County and the school districts are among the largest employers in the region. While I have not settled on my final budget decisions, I think it's no secret that it will lead to the loss of hundreds of jobs at Multnomah County. Those are high-skilled, family-wage jobs. Those people pay income taxes. Those people go to ball games. Those people support restaurants. And so when we're talking about job creation, don't lose sight of the jobs that are already here that in many cases just as important and in many cases might even be better paying jobs than the ones we're considering bringing in. So I want to just end on a personal note. I understand that this is a very difficult decision for all of you. I'm getting the same emails you are. The community is divided over this, and I understand that. I'm asking you to do something tough. I'm asking you not to approve an urban renewal area without understanding what its borders are, what its indebtedness level is, and what its impact will be on the other services being provided both by the county and the school districts. Since neither the county nor the school districts have a formal seat at the table as this decision gets made, we're counting on you to represent our interests at that table. And I believe that you will do no less. And I appreciate your time. Thank you.
So if I could turn it, would you stay for a few questions?
Yes, of course. Comment? Yes, Mayor.
And could we also just get everyone is, do you, is there another member of the school board here? Did I see Ruth?
Ruth is upstairs, but I think I'm going to speak for the board today.
So. Thank you for being here and
thank you. It's been an interesting discussion. Do you want me to make my comments now and then ask questions?
Yeah, and that way you can either choose to stay or go if you have other appointments.
Okay, thank you. So I'm Trudy Sargent. I'm co-chair of the Board of Education for Portland Public Schools, and I'm here to talk about urban renewal, not here to take a position on whether the stadium is a good idea or a bad idea. The Board of Education isn't concerned with that issue. But we really share Chair Wheeler's concerns about urban renewal. We have a major stake in the city's urban renewal discussion. We support urban renewal as a critical mechanism for increasing economic vitality and employment in all parts of our city, and we want to be a partner with the city as it works towards a strong and healthy future. As you may know, recently our district and the Portland Development Commission signed an intergovernmental agreement that laid out very specific ways that we're engaging in urban renewal planning and the impacts and opportunities that it brings. Our schools have a direct financial stake in urban renewal. I want to just take a moment to talk about tax increment financing and how it affects our schools. So usually, Portland Public Schools can count on a gradual increase in property tax revenues. The 3% that is the 3% increase in taxable assessed values set out under Measure 50 and the property tax increases due to new construction and redevelopment. Under current law, however, our tax collections in urban renewal areas are frozen, so our schools forgo any increase in tax revenues as property values increase. There are 10 urban renewal areas in the city that are partially or entirely within Portland Public Schools District, and that covers almost 10% of our jurisdiction. Some were formed under current law. Others are older, with the oldest dating back to 1974 and 1985. According to the Portland Development Commission's calculations for 2007-2008, Portland Public Schools did not collect $5 million in property taxes that would have directly supported our local schools through the gap levy and our local option. In addition, the state school fund didn't collect $15 million in taxes from our permanent rate. So tax increment financing has a direct and significant impact on our general fund. And I know you all are aware of the serious financial straits that Oregon schools are in, and you know that Portland Public Schools faces cuts in staff and sacrifices across our operations. So urban renewal impacts our budget, and that affects our schools, our teachers, and our students. That said, Portland Public Schools has and will support urban renewal funding when it's clear that the initial public investment will be a catalyst for private capital investment and when sound planning process has occurred to maximize the opportunities. We support projects that will bring long-term family wage jobs to our city, that will drive up assessed values and our future tax revenues, and which show the promise of bringing more families into the heart of the city. But we support urban renewal within the context of the city's established urban renewal planning process, where representatives of local governments like the school districts and the county, residents and businesses in the affected area come together to develop a thought-out plan for revitalization in a blighted area. So that means that we need to be involved in an open and transparent discussion about creating the urban renewal area, defining its boundaries, establishing the ceiling of its indebtedness, and setting the priorities for the projects to be undertaken. So the current commitment before you to designate urban renewal funds to renovate a stadium in a location that has not yet even been declared an urban renewal area doesn't meet the standards that we hold for our support, and it short shrifts the planning process. And it's clear from the discussion that I've heard today that there was an extensive process that was engaged in by the city. This, you had a task force, they talked to a lot of people, but the city, the school district, and the county were never involved in those discussions. And I think that was one of the critical missing pieces in the process. So the project before you will cost millions to our schools and more to schools statewide. At this point, we don't see the return on investment that could make up for the sacrifice to our schools. So we can't support you moving forward in this manner and want you to consider this in the context of the broader urban renewal discussions. When making decisions about resources that will have a multi-generational impact on our city and on multiple taxing jurisdictions, we believe it's critical that we have the chance to engage in real and open dialogue about the impacts to us and about the opportunities. So thank you.
Well, just to your both of your requests, we will absolutely fulfill our agreement with the school districts in terms of an open and transparent process. You absolutely, as well, both of your jurisdictions will have a seat at the table and be part of the process. This does not create an urban renewal district. This sets forth a, as you heard clarified between the questions between Commissioner Fish and staff, this sets forward some concepts that will shape discussions, future discussions around coming to definitive agreements, such as the potential for a funding, a piece of it being funded by an new urban renewal district. But that is not a foregone conclusion. Merritt knows that. We will fulfill our agreements for you being involved, for you helping to make those decisions that you just talked about.
Appreciate
Mayor,
that.
Mayor Adams.
Yes, sir.
So I want to make just some general observations, and then I have just some more specific questions of Chair Wheeler. But I first want to acknowledge what some are probably going to observe, that there is some irony involved in me, of all people, defending urban renewal districts, and by extension, the PDC. I've been here 6 years now, and that's not necessarily my pattern since I've arrived here. But I do need to say that I think that there is a lot of misunderstandings in the public about how urban renewal districts work, and it would appear from your comments that may extend to you as well. The part that has been frustrating to me as I read critics who are elected officials of urban renewal areas is that when an urban renewal area is drawn, and let's take one for example, the Pearl District. The Pearl District, when the urban renewal district was drawn, was, to be polite, a very challenged area. I worked there in 1972 at the Blitz-Weinhard factory as a student at Portland State. We went in groups to work and away because it was a dangerous place. It was virtually contributing nothing to the city's tax base. To today then say that the taxes generated in the Pearl District amount to part of what I'm assuming, Chair Wheeler, you've described as this $20 million per year that you forego in tax revenue is misleading. Those revenues would not be available were it not for the work done in those urban renewal areas. But even more specifically, there are urban renewal districts that exist currently, four to be exact, that actually do pay back to jurisdictions, school district, the school district, and to Multnomah County. And I'll just pick one for an example because it's probably one of the most stark examples. The Airport Way Urban Renewal District, if people will recall, the area that is now the urban renewal district where IKEA exists and other like businesses, there was literally nothing there. Beyond there being nothing there, there was contaminated property there. It, in fact, had a tax base when the urban renewal district was drawn of $2.7 million. Today, it is true that $2.5 million has gone to PDC to do infrastructure work out of that district since it was drawn. But $16 million in increased value has gone to Multnomah County and Portland Public Schools as added revenue, as is in the case of three other school districts. So I would say that I think that that obviously this is an important dialogue that we have, but I think we need to deal with the facts, because I think that actually in many cases we have improved. In fact, I would argue that the revenues you receive now are greater than what they otherwise would have been had we not had any urban renewal areas at all. I would point out also more specifically, Chair Wheeler, and I hope I've demonstrated in our working together the past few years that I don't just think we should be partners. I have been a partner in very real ways. And for instance, we do insist as a council that 30% of urban renewal area dollars be spent on affordable housing, which strictly speaking is something that I would think at least the county has a lot of interest in providing housing for people who might otherwise be homeless or for a variety of reasons can't find good housing. But I want to remind you, Chair Wheeler, we have dedicated to you, promised to you $9 million for the county to build a courthouse out of an urban renewal area downtown at your request. We've given $35 million from the Pearl District URA to the county to support your services. We have promised $2 million from the Central East Side urban renewal area for the Hooper Detox Center renovation. We have cobbled together in the urban renewal area around the Ramada Hotel on the other side of the river for, again, drug treatment, housing, and an issue you feel strongly about, and I agree with you on, mental health housing, $14 million of PDC urban renewal dollars that, strictly speaking, are dollars that under Resolution A could be argued the county should be responsible for. We've, since I've been on the council, understanding the economic plight that you described that the county is suffering, we've given $4 million directly from the city council to help fund the jails, the Multnomah County jails. We have given $2 million to help the county in providing alcohol and drug treatment for those that you don't have the resources to help fund. You've asked us, and we are considering giving you $8 million a year to bond to build to help pay for the rebuilding of the Selwood Bridge. And last but not least, you and I are working together to develop essentially what is a plan to tax Portlanders to give to the county to provide a minimum level of animal control services. So I'm disturbed when, I mean, I think you certainly have the right to take the position you're taking. I think you certainly have the responsibility to point out when we are making decisions that could adversely affect you, but I would respectfully say that's not the case here. And more importantly, I think we've demonstrated, and I even got into the schools, I mean, the amount of the millions of dollars we've given to the school from the general fund since I've been on the council, and Vera Katz is in the back of the room under her leadership even more. I think we've proven ourselves to be more than a reliable partner, but one that is responsible and cares very deeply. And we put our money where our mouth is. When you guys need help, we've always stood up to help you, and I think way more than what we're obligated to do, and to the tune of much greater dollars than what these urban renewal areas would have generated for you. Thank you.
May I respond to that, Mayor?
Yes, Chair.
Thank you. And thank you, Commissioner Leonard, for reminding us that there are many good projects that we work on together, many of which are funded through urban renewal. And I think I have a middle ground. You and I often have these back and forths, and I appreciate it. And frankly, I enjoy it, and it's always good dialogue. My recommendation would be this. You started this conversation off by saying we were picking a fight. And I presume that was intended, as you mentioned, the county to me. And what I would suggest is we work on a broader unified vision. It's not the county versus the city. The people sitting in the back of this room don't really give a damn where the tax dollars come from, because they all come from the same pocket, and they're asking us for the same services. So what I would suggest is rather than throwing out an idea on a Monday and letting us know what the details are 20 minutes before you vote on it, that you bring us to the table so that we can weigh the priorities together. And we can talk about what you want, we can talk about what Trudy wants, and we can talk about human services. I have a vision that includes tourism, it includes urban development, includes economic development, includes job creation. There's a role for professional sports, but there's also a role for making sure that older adults are able to live in their homes independently and safely. There's a role to make sure that we as a community, not Multnomah County, but we as a community can provide the services that the most chronically and severely mentally ill can rely on. It's very important that people with either mental or physical disabilities have the services that they're entitled to. It's important that we have a safe community. And I'm not sitting here with my hand out. I'm saying here is an example of where we should be working together to prioritize mutually, and we're not. I didn't even know what you guys were voting on today. And it's obvious from some of the questions being asked for the commissioners, they weren't clear on what's being voted on today either. I've heard lawyers, I've heard consultants, I've heard planners from the city of Portland all standing up and saying there's no risk to Multnomah County. Well, with all due respect, I'm new in the job, but I wasn't born yesterday. I'd like to have my lawyers and my consultants and my planners take a look at this, and then we can come to the table and mutually agree on what our community's priorities should be. So as per usual, Commissioner, I respectfully disagree with you, but I do look
forward. Disagree with the amount of money we've given you, or you disagree?
No, I do not disagree with that.
Oh.
I do not. I do not. But I also just want to say it's not your money. It's the money that belongs to the tax. It's not. It's the money that belongs to the taxpayers.
That changes
jurisdiction.
That changes
future discussion. And surprise, our constituents are one and the same. They don't care whether you're wearing a city hat, I'm wearing a county hat. They want and expect us to deliver certain services. And as long as we are not communicating, as long as you know, we have things dumped on our lap a few minutes before you guys vote on them, and it's a closed and non-transparent process. We are not serving the best interests of the taxpayers of this jurisdiction, whether they call them county taxpayers or city taxpayers. So that's just respectfully my opinion.
Well, let me just—I just need to—I just need to clarify a couple of remarks.
Sure.
Let me make it real clear that because that was those were great remarks. If you're running for office. But once we're elected to office, I think it's responsible for us to know what the facts are. And the facts are we take resources that are otherwise dedicated to parks, and I don't know if you've heard about this, but we have parks that need a lot of work, and we even need
Absolutely.
More parks in East Portland. We take resources that are dedicated for firefighters. We've decided not to open a fire station because we haven't got the general fund dollars to do that. We take resources that would otherwise be dedicated to hire police officers, and we need more police officers, and we're challenged for that. And we've given the money to you and to the school district. So to argue that somehow we're obligated to give you that because it's taxpayer dollars.
I have not argued that.
Well, excuse me.
I listened
to you. Feels a little disingenuous. And frankly, if I were to get up in the morning and issue a press release every time you made a decision, for instance, giving $6 million to Fairview, Troutdale, and Gresham to subsidize their general funds because they don't do the business license fee that we do, feels a little hard to understand as well. So you make some decisions at the county that you're free to make, but I think you can't have it both ways. You can't come in here and represent yourself as being self-righteous about decisions that we're making and then turn around and expect us to be the partners we've been.
Commissioner
Fish, I'll end the conversation here.
Start exercising.
The East County taxing issue is entirely different, and you know that is based on an historical agreement where they gave up their right to charge business income tax.
But it's a decision.
And that was
made.
A mutually agreed upon fair decision at the time, which we choose to uphold. We live up to our agreements in Multnomah County. But I think a lot of this conversation should not happen in this forum. I believe there should be a deeper dialogue where we are communicating and we are sharing our priorities.
Chair Wheeler, you and I have been having conversations about how our institutions can help each other.
You bet.
And
I
hope that in the weeks ahead that as we move concentric circles of those initially you and I discussions, that we'll be able to move in concentric circles to involve our colleagues with that. And our other jurisdictions that share the responsibility for providing public services here in Portland. I do want to add my sort of thoughts on this issue, and I want to say at the preface that we enjoy great relations with the county. I enjoy the partnerships that my office has with you, and I feel the same with the school districts. I do think that some of the language, though, not you and not you, but I do think some of the language of urban renewal has been very inflammatory, and I do think it has been misleading. I guess I've been around too long, and I know the original plans for South Waterfront, and I know the original plans for what is now called the Pearl District, and I know how underwhelming they were, and that without urban renewal in partnership with a lot of private money, that we wouldn't have those neighborhoods. You wouldn't be able to claim that you're not getting a certain amount of tax base because that kind of redevelopment wouldn't happen. We're looking at the West Side. We've been looking at the West Side for a number of months in terms of its potential. Conway is interested in redeveloping their area. They have dozens and dozens of blocks out there that are simply parking lots. You're not getting tax increases from that. We're not getting tax increases from that. I look forward to working with you as we figure out what is in our mutual interest. There's a school, you know, being able to unlock the potential of the Lincoln School site, you know, has real possibility, including the possibility of providing more close-in K through 12, you know, educational facilities. You don't have the resources for that, but we might be able to come up with a partnership to do that as part of a tax increment discussion. PSU, our great new leaders at PSU have ambitions that you fully support to become a world-class institution. If the emerging university master plan doesn't have resources to implement it, they're going to be stuck where they are. I also think that over time, previous councils have established urban renewal districts out in some of the poorest parts of the city, Lentz and Gateway, even parts of North Portland. And a lot of that money has been used to upgrade infrastructure that was that part of the city or at the time unincorporated area because it is at sort of county level services. So we've used money to sort of backfill the infrastructure needs that were not required of development when it was in the unincorporated area. There's a lot of angst about this. You know, from our point of view, this was about coming up with funding options for providing this new benefit to the community. It doesn't lock the council into actually going on to create an urban renewal district. And the reason it doesn't is out of respect for the conversations that we need to have with both of you and a whole host of other stakeholders as well. So I just wanted to make sure you knew that and that the discussion of whether or not we proceed with an urban renewal needs to include you and be done in a way that benefits you as well. So I really appreciate you being here today. Is there anyone else on council that would like to say anything?
Thank you. Thank you. You know, there's one of my favorite sports metaphors is the line about the I went to the fights and a hockey game broke out. And I appreciate the world-class sort of scrum with two people I consider good friends and colleagues. But I want to actually bring this back to the question that's before us, because we're going to have that discussion and debate about urban renewal for a long time. And mercifully, I wasn't here during most of those old fights. And so I'm actually looking forward to the question of how we create new urban renewal districts, because I actually think that you're both right. And where, for me, the line is not looking backwards and debating whether the Pearl District enriched the whole community. Certainly it did. The question before us is how we create new districts going forward. And that I believe is a fundamentally different proposition. Now, we have an agreement that's been struck between PDC and the school district saying that they will collaborate and confer. Well, I guess my daughter and I collaborate and confer, but I get the final say. And this sounds like a procedural concession, not a substantive concession. But a procedural concession says you're at the table, we're talking about it, we're gauging impact. And that's already been agreed to. There's no one here that disagrees with that. The question is how we enforce that. What does it mean to confer and collaborate? One of the portions of the Urban Renewal District funding on the west side that gives me a little heartburn, frankly, even before I got 5,000 emails from Stanford Children, was that it's a to-be-established district with no process that's preceded it, that it has to have money taken out at the front end in a way that's pretty edgy, and that the increment is achieved by taking the first one of the new major high-rises coming up downtown, which will hopefully be online in time for this, under this scenario, would be the new Moyer Building, which will be drawn into the district and the increment and captured to fund the increment. Now, whether you support this deal or not, that is a different financing model than any other piece. Because if Mr. Moyer builds this building and Stoll Reeves goes into that building, we are diverting money that would otherwise go to other purposes. whether in the great scheme of things, that money being diverted and the money that we are investing in county projects ends up being a good deal for the county and the city. I can't judge that here. Your job is to say it's always lacking. Our job is to say is to remind you of the significant investments we're making, and then we come to some detente around that. But that this urban renewal piece of the financing, to me, is different than the other pieces. And when I'm told that on the east side, the zero coupon bonds, if issued, would have